Blog Talk Radio.
Outside of Tom Brady, Wes Welker is the most valuable Patriot. If you neutralize Welker,
then Aaron Hernandez and Rod Gronkowski are nowhere near as good as normally are. And that was a big, again, that was a huge part of that game, taking Welker out. And most importantly, even with the adjustments that were made, Lamar Woodley led the backfield against Alabama. I mean, Woodley, Taylor were the two most important players on the field, even more important than Big Ben. Brady, now you look at Brady's numbers, you're saying, not bad, 25, 34, 35, 198, two touchdowns, no interceptions. But that doesn't account for the times he was hit. It doesn't account for the times he was hurt. It doesn't account for the times, you know, he got the quote-unquote happy feet. Brady, and this is why I had this discussion with a friend of mine, big football fan. This is what separates Aaron Rodgers from Tom Brady right now. This is the reason why Aaron Rodgers is the better player. Aaron Rodgers can throw on the run and be just as accurate if he was just, as if he were just standing, as if he was just. You can move him out of the pocket. It doesn't matter. Tom Brady, you know, he can step up, he can slot to the left, he can slot to the right, but he's not a guy that, you know, when he gets happy feet and it's foot to move, then he's not the same quarterback. He's not. And also, he's not the same quarterback when he gets punched. I mean, let's be honest about that, too. Ben Roethlisberger, and it's better than Roethlisberger, but Roethlisberger has over Brady is a guy who can get punched in the mouth, can get beat up, get sacked a million times, and then lead you in the fourth quarter to a game-winning drive. That's not Brady. Brady needs a clean pocket. He needs great protection. Good protection. He has a quick release. But, there are a few things that he has to go right in order for Tom Brady to beat out Tom Brady. Now, again, we're talking about how Tom Brady is going to have the best quarterback in the league. But a couple things that have to go right for him to do what he does. Patriots got, listen, I've been saying this for the whole entire season, basically, with the Patriots defense. That is not a championship driver. And if you were, going to get exposed at one point in particular in the regular season, if the Patriots don't get the lights out offense out of Brady, they can't win. And now it's going to be interesting to see down the road teams taking this Steelers done as they do against the Patriots. Okay, we're going to put our best cover corner on West Welker, man up on the receivers and see what the Patriots do to adjust. See what adjustments the Patriots make. Remember, the Steelers are James Harrison. Again, that secondary, it's not a big time secondary. I mean, Ike Taylor is a physical player, very good player. Ike Taylor, there are 10 cornerbacks that are better than Ike Taylor. He's not a upper echelon cornerback. He's a perfect fit for what the Steelers do. Physical guy, great tackler. But I mean, listen, you can beat Ike Taylor, man. And they're able to get away with that strategy against the Patriots. Still couldn't against the Packers. Or against a team that has a big time power by receiving against Detroit. But with that said, big time victory out of the Steelers. They go 6-2. On the season, they lead that division by a half game over the Ravens. Of course, has a showdown next week against Baltimore, and it's a very impressive victory. Again, you couldn't be more impressed with the adjustments that were made. I always like to see that. It got to a point where it's like, okay, Brady has lit your team up so many times. I mean, are you ever going to change Dick LeBeau? And then Dick LeBeau is a great defensive, maybe the greatest defensive coordinator in National League, in the NFL history. I mean, he's that good, but you were just waiting for something, some type of change or subtle adjustment, and he made an ingenious move, and it was the difference between them winning and losing the game. And it probably shouldn't have even been that close, to be honest with you. I mean, it still kicked the Patriots all over the field. We'll talk and also in work that like the focus for the Texans. We'll get to that question more on this latest edition of the NFL show.
He could be like this week, but the ball is 24-14.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Surreal Quinn taking you till 8:30 as we discuss the NFL week number 8, almost halfway through the season. After completion of week number 9, everybody would have played at least 8 games. So basically, this season is almost halfway done. Cincinnati gets an impressive win over Seattle, 34-12. Cincinnati improves to 5-2. Seattle falls to 2-5. And you say, well, why was this victory so impressive? Seattle's awful. In fact, that Tavares Jackson made his return. Well, you are a young team, and Cincinnati is a very young team with a rookie quarterback, and you're trying to build something, trying to establish something. Wins on the road are like gold, and I don't care who you play. And when you can win on the road by more than 2 touchdowns, that's an impressive win. I mean, look what happened. Look what happened to the Giants. Look what happened to the Saints yesterday. Okay? So, you know, a team that's trying to grow, that's trying to, you know, develop, build something, you can't speak of these. I mean, listen, the Seattle's not going anywhere. But especially when your yardage, when they didn't really put up a lot of big numbers. I mean, Seattle outgained them. I'll gain them over the course of the game. Danny Dalton, AK 29, 168, 2 touchdowns, had a couple of picks. And they just, I mean, they did what they had to do, basically. And this game was never in doubt. I don't think about it. This game was never in doubt. And that, you know, I know Seattle is not very good right now, but that could be a tricky place to play up there in Seattle. They have a great crowd. You know, the travel, cross country, that's a trap game. It is a definition of a trap game. There's no question. So I was very impressed, despite the opponent, very impressed with what Cincinnati was able to do in that particular game. Tavares Jackson went 21 for 43, 23, but had no touchdowns and also one interception. Made his return. Cincinnati improves to 5-2 on the season as they stay. And they're going to stay right there in that tight AFC North. Key pace with Pittsburgh and also the Ravens as well. San Francisco over Cleveland, 20-10. San Francisco improves to 6-1 on the season. Cleveland falls to 3-4. The 49ers continue to run away from that division. See, they are now basically four games ahead of their next team in line, which is the Seattle Seahawks. Now, that division's over like right now. I mean, it is like. San Francisco right now is really playing for home field, and with this victory, keep the pressure on the Green Bay Packers. San Francisco, I mean, this game was a 17-10 game in the fourth quarter, but you never really got the sense that San Francisco was in any danger. Alex Smith continues to, manage the game, not make the critical error, going 15-24 at 177. A touchdown, no picks. Frank Gore has now rushed for 100 yards in 4 straight games. Another big game out of him, 31 for 134 and a touchdown. This is what I like about San Francisco. In a league where we see all these teams who are treating the pass like it was crack in the 80s, San Francisco runs the ball 39 times. They throw the ball 24 times. Okay, this is what they're going to do. They're going to play solid defense. They're going to, and run football. This is who they are. This is what they're going to do. And it doesn't matter if Frank Gore doesn't put up big numbers. They are going to run the football. No matter what the score is, they have to be basically losing 30-0 to abandon the run. And you have to respect that. Out of the 49ers, because we see so many teams that, again, we've talked about this repeatedly during the course of this season, how many teams get away from the run and get pass happy, and then next thing you know, they either blow a lead or they underuse a running back who is pretty good on some teams, and we've seen that a number of times this year as well. Not San Francisco. Frank Gore is going to get the football. That's all there is to it. He's going to get the football, and he's going to get a lot. 31 carries. It's a ton of carries for him, for a running back in, like, you know, this day and time, is almost unheard of. So, again, they improved to 6-1 on the season, and it certainly doesn't get any more difficult. That will be a trap game next week when they play the Redskins at Washington. That is going cross country. I believe it's a 1 o'clock game. So that's a dangerous game for them. It's a game that they should win, but that is the definition of a trap game because you can't help but to look ahead if you're playing the Washington Redskins at this point. You can't. That's all it is. You can be the most disciplined, you know, well-coached, well-oiled machine, but that's going to be a very interesting game to see is how they respond. When we return, the Giants survive, and how many people, by raising hand, are still on the Tim Tebow bandwagon? Don't answer that. We'll answer that once we return on this latest edition of the NFL Show. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We'll be right back. Not talking about the Russo thing. We might squeeze that in at the end of the program, but this just came over the wire. I'm sure every Yankee fan knows it. CeCe Sabathia has agreed, shockingly, to not walk away from basically $23 million a year, and he has decided not to opt out of his contract. He signed a one-year extension on top of the 4 years that he already has on his contract. The extension is worth, I believe I saw $25 million. So he's gonna be a Yankee until, you know, 2015, 2016, at least minimum 4 more years. Edward, minimum 4 more years. He's going to be a New York Yankee. He decides not to opt out of his contract. I thought he would opt out, but, you know, like New York, won a championship there. You know, so it's not. Listen, it's $23 million. I mean, that's. So he's got a longer term deal on the open market. Maybe I'm sure he could have, but I think it came down to the fact that he didn't want to leave New York. And the Yankees are going to take care of him. I mean, you know, Yankees are going to take care of him. He's going to make $23 million, which in my opinion is not too shabby. And he's going to get $25 million. He's going to get a raise after these 4 years are up. So not a bad deal, and he's deserving of it. The guy is one of the best top five pitchers in all of baseball, one of the best left-handers out there. Maybe probably the premier left-hander in the American League. I mean, he's the Yankees can now afford to lose him. So, good news for the Yankee fans. Bad news for everybody else. That's the bad deal. Will remain the Yankee come 2012. Giants over Miami 20-17. Giants improved to 5-2 on the season. Miami go drops to 0-7. Tough break for Miami. They really played extremely hard. Reggie Bush had a big game with 103 yards rushing on just 15 carries. Matt Moore made some plays, even though his stats don't look that impressive. 13-22, 138, no touchdown passes, one interception. He did run for a touchdown, but he made some decent plays. amidst just a brutal pass rush that really was the difference in the game in the fourth quarter. Giants had 5 sacks for the game. I bet you about 3 of those came in that decisive fourth quarter. Eli Manning has played great this year. Let's just be real about it. He was 31 of 45, 349, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He's cut down on his interceptions. He's put up some, like the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's put up some just ridiculous numbers. And again, he's playing as well as he's played in his entire career. So, got to give him his credit. What credit is due, played well, played extremely well. And the Giants get a much needed win as they are about to embark on one of the most brutal stretches as far as the schedule goes that I've ever seen. And I'm going to give you their next 7 games. They're at New England, at San Francisco, home to Philly, at New Orleans, home to Green Bay, at Dallas. I mean, you're talking about Brady, Rodgers, and Breeze. Think about that. You see Brady, Rodgers, and Breeze, the 3 best quarterbacks in the league. So that game, they had to win that game. Like, they, you know, yeah, Yankee fans, 2016, extension for $25 million, to be exact. Just, you know, to have that correct. The Giants had to win that game last night, yesterday. If they don't win that game, I don't think they make the playoffs. That's how big of a game that was. And again, Miami played extremely hard. Giants probably weren't looking ahead, which is understandable considering they're traveling down up to Foxborough next week. And again, Miami, they're an easy team to look past. I mean, you got Matt Moore. Matt Moore is your quarterback. Reggie Bush is your running back. Enough said. Like this was the definition of a trap game, but the Giants were able to survive it. And with a brutal pass rush in the fourth quarter. Matt Moore was running for his life in that fourth quarter. I mean, he escaped. He made a couple of escapes, but you know that the latter part of that fourth quarter, the Giants' pass rush really took over. The Giants, you know, you could throw Luminora out there, Justin Tuck, Pierre Paul. That pass rush is as good as it is in the NFL right now with that front four. And the way they rotate guys, and they have a plethora of quality pass rushes, and they're going to need them next week against Tom Brady, of course. Detroit routes Denver 45-10. Detroit gives off the snide, ends this 2-game losing streak, improves to 6-2. Denver falls to 2-5. This game was never in doubt. Detroit got out to a 24-3 lead. Forget about, you know, Invesco Field, the thin air. That stuff meant nothing yesterday in that particular game. And you got the sense that Detroit enjoyed every single moment of it. There's a lot of talk during the game, a lot of talk leading up to the game that they were tired of hearing, you know, all the Tebow stuff and this and that. Make fun of them. I think he went too far with the, you know, basically against his, his religion, so to speak, and there's a little tasteless for my liking, but you can understand, you know, I'm tired of hearing about them people, so you can only imagine if you're a football player, you're prepared to play him, and people walk up to you and say, how are you going to stop people? And you say to yourself, well, damn, the guy, he's not that good. And some one of the Detroit players said, the unknown quote, Detroit player said that, you know, this is your quarterback, really? This is the guy that's going to lead you. You know, just mockingly said that about Tebow. And listen, he is who he is. I mean, 18-39, 172, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. And his stats didn't even look bad. He didn't even play that well. Okay. Tim Tebow is not an NFL quarterback. You forget about being a starter. You forget about being a starting quarterback. He's not a backup quarterback. I think Tim Tebow would make a decent fullback, H-back, who can catch out of backfield and block. I'm not even joking when I say that. I really do. Anytime you throw the ball and don't know where it's going, That's a problem. And when he drops back to pass and throws the ball, he doesn't know where it's going. But again, despite that impressive victory at Detroit, you know, Stafford had a big day, Calvin Johnson had a big day, they had two defensive touchdowns. The one stat that stood out for me, more than any other stat, and looking ahead in terms of the Lions, 30 for 195. That is how many rushes and how many yards that the Denver Broncos had. Now you can see, well, Tebow had 10 for 63. Well, fine. Let's take that away. That's still 20 for, say, 132, if my math is correct. Yeah. Or 133. 20 for 133. That's too many yards. It's too many. Especially as the weather gets colder, going down the stretch, team, you cannot win in this league and give up that many yards running and not be able to stop the run. Teams will just, they'll, you know, especially when you're in conference with LeSean McCoy, Matt Forte, you know, you have Michael Vick to deal with. Green Bay will run despite the amount of weapons they have on the outside. Frank Moore, you know, like that is going to come back, and, you know, Ahmad Bradshaw to a less extent. It's going to come back and bite Detroit if they don't get that thing shored up. Adrian Peterson, I mean, they still play Minnesota again. Keep that in mind. But they do get off the slide and get right on the road, and they've been very impressive on the road back to last season. 5 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Again, poll question of the night: who is the second best team in the AFC? In the NFC, when we return, we will go through the shocker of the day, and will Indy ever win a game? We'll talk about that and much, much more coming up on this latest edition of the NFL Show. We'll be right back.
When you walk through the garden, watch your back. Well, I bet.
After the 8 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the NFL Show, St. Louis in the just upset of the day, without question, defeats New Orleans 31-21 in a game that frankly wasn't even that close. 31-21, they get their first win of the season to go to improve to 1-6. Saints dropped to 5-3. And again, I got a chance to see a lot of this game on, you know, the red zone and all. Because everybody just couldn't believe what they were watching. And it was just, you know, the Saints, first of all, the Saints defensively are bad. I mean, so we talk about the Patriots, we talk about some other teams. The Saints are bad defensively. They're bad. They don't generate turnovers. They can't stop the run. Steven Jackson goes nuts. 25 for 159, 2 touchdowns. Jay Fielding was very efficient with 20 of 37, 175, and a touchdown. No picks. Breeze had his probably worst game of the season, 30 of 44, 269, 2 interceptions. Did keep his touchdown streak alive. I believe it's at 36 now. 35, one behind Brett Favre for that all-time lead in terms of most games with consecutive games with a touchdown. Of course, the late and great Johnny Unitas is the all-time leader in that category. Chris Long had a big day. How was, of course, Harry Long's son, Bruce Sacks. St. Louis had 6 sacks on the day. Philly played well. Brendan Roy called touchdown. And St. Louis just absolutely had their way. This game shouldn't even been that close. Had their way with St. Louis, with the New Orleans Saints. Championship, and I get it. A friend of mine, we had this conversation today, and he made a very fair point. Championship teams don't lose these types of games. Now, I've been sitting here on this show, on this program, and basically for the first, I would say, 7 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks of the season, telling you that the best teams in football are the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints. I can no longer say that because the Saints are not there. The Saints are not an elite football team that's going to win a championship this year or capable of winning a championship this year with that defense. They're not. Their running game is inconsistent. Again, Drew Brees is off even by a little bit, similar to what Brady and New England, then they can lose. Forget about losing to an elite team. They can lose to even the Cardinals. the Rams. But they're definitely not beating an elite team with that lack of a running game and also with that defense playing the way it's playing. I'm really surprised on how bad their defense has been because they went out and made all these acquisitions defensively with their defensive line, and it hasn't done anything. I mean, it really hasn't. They cannot stop the run. I mean, you have a running game, you can definitely do some damage. I mean, Indianapolis, and Tom Jackson talked about it yesterday on ESPN, Indianapolis had 155 yards rushing against them. And I did not realize that. I was too wrapped up in the 62-7 to look at that stat. And that was a great stat because the Colts don't run on anybody. Colts couldn't run on a high school team. So that was a very telling stat and definitely foreshadowed what was going to transpire this week against the Rams. Good for the Rams. And the Rams are better than that record. I think the Rams, they get Bradford back. Lloyd has played well since he's been there. I think Rams will win 4 or 5 games, to be honest with you. Tennessee over Indianapolis, 27-10. Tennessee improves to 4-3. Indianapolis drops to 0-8. Hasselbeck had a good day, 23-33, 224, touchdown, no picks. Indianapolis is just, I'm looking at their schedule. Chris Johnson continues to struggle, by the way. 14-34. And, the thing about Chris Johnson is he gets paid. He's out of shape, and he blames everybody else. There's no accountability whatsoever. Like, not my fault. No holes. They can't block this, that. That contract, boy, I'm telling you, they might be lamenting that contract this time next year. I'm trying to figure out how many games or if they have to win a game. The way I'm booking now, they have 3 chances. They have 2 games against Jacksonville and 1 home game against Tennessee. Now, their best possible chance is probably the one home game against Jacksonville. That's probably the best chance. Other than that, they're going over 16. And I don't think they mind. To be honest with you. When we return, are the Eagles back? And a disgrace north of the border. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm 10 minutes after the day I found on this latest edition of the NFL show, so we're recording, taking you to 8:30 as we look back and discuss week 8 of the NFL season. Philadelphia gets a budget win over there. Team rivals, Dallas Cowboys, 31-7. Both teams are at 3-4. Huge win for the Eagles. Eagles played a complete football game for the first time this year. They dominated this game from start to finish. It was never in doubt. The story of this game to me, there are a couple of things. Number one, LeSean McCoy, 30 for 185, 2 touchdowns. This guy, you know, I'm a little biased because he's on a fantasy team. But listen, you know, putting fantasy stuff aside, this dude is one of the top 3-4 running backs in all football. I mean, yeah, he's that good. He really is. And, you know, Eagles just dominated the Cowboys. They had about almost 500 yards to offense. And you get the sense that the Eagles had the Cowboys game plan. Like, they knew where every blitz was coming from. And it was amazing. It was remarkable how they just had answered it and the Cowboys threw it at them. The second part of the day that was baffling and puzzling is this lack of trust that the Cowboys have now for Tony Romo. Like, you know, other than Jason, he didn't throw the ball hardly to Dez Bryant or Miles Austin. Now, you're going to look at the ESPN stats and say, you know, both of them probably were targeted 5 times. I wish I could find out how many times he threw the ball to him in the first half. Because I guarantee you the majority of those passes came when the game was well decided. And, you know, when you have those type of weapons, I understand that Romo doesn't have big turnovers in key situations. You can't take the ball out of his hands. I get the sense that they are trying to take it that Jason Garrett does not trust him and that Jerry Jones is basically calling the plays. Because Jerry Jones got to get some radio and says, we need to run the ball. All of a sudden, just like run. Now, last night, you had a situation where they had no choice but to throw the ball 35 times because they got down on so much. But again, I don't sense that there's much trust between Garrett and Tony Romo. And that is a problem that's going to be festering. That's why you can't trust the Cowboys. I absolutely cannot trust the Cowboys going down the stretch. I don't care how good they look against the big teams, whether it be the New England's, the world, or the Jets, or they almost did this, almost did that. I can't trust them. I absolutely cannot trust them. Philly still has some issues with the run defense. DeMarco Murray had 74 yards from just 8 carries, and the only reason he had more is because Dallas was so far behind that they had to abandon the run. So that's still an issue for them as far as their run defense is concerned. But when they do two things, when they run the ball and when they don't turn over the ball, that offense is unstoppable. There's no defending it. See, you know, they have the ability to spread you out. And also, you also like the fact, if you're a Philly fan, that they reincorporated Brent Celek in that. Celek is an all-pro caliber of talent, people. I mean, this guy, you know, he's a legit Pro Bowl, again, all-pro caliber player. They just have not used him since Vic took over the quarterback duties last year. So you like that aspect if you're a Philly fan. Again, there's no way to defend that offense right now because when they're playing the right way, still turn from Terry Brown, ex-Sixer coach back in the day. If you try to go one-on-one and stack 8 at the line of scrimmage to stop McCoy, then you're going one-on-one with those receivers. They're too fast. If you drop back your safeties and try to take away the outside stuff, the deep stuff, which the Cowboys did last night, then they're going to run the ball with McCoy, and they're going to kill you with Celek when they decide to throw him the football. So how do you defend that? You know, Jason Peters was getting him back last night was huge for them. They look like a completely different offensive line, despite the fact that DeMarcus Ware didn't have 4 sacks. He's DeMarcus Ware. He's that good. But they were the quietest 4 sacks, forced fumble that you'll ever see. And it was very quiet. Did not impact the game whatsoever. So, again, they're going to be hurt for them. There's no question about it. They've kind of righted the ship, so to speak, got, you know, have a chance to get back to the Harbinger next week. So we'll see what happens with them. Buffalo 23, Washington 0. The fans who attended the Rogers Center yesterday should just have their tickets, should have their money given back for that just brutal performance by the Washington Redskins offense. Nobody should be subjected to watching what the Washington Redskins put out there on that field offensively yesterday. They should. I mean, it's all there is to it. Redskins had 178 total yards. Fred Jackson outgained the Redskins by himself with 194 yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the new $59 million man, was very efficient, 21-27, two touchdowns, an interception, a great play by Lundy Fletcher on that interception, and 262 yards passing. Redskins only had 26 yards rushing, allowed Buffalo to sack the quarterback, John Beck, 9 times, despite the fact that they only came into the game with 4 sacks on the entire season. Redskins are on that train that is going off the rail. And it's going, it's that train, boy, get off that train now, because it's the Titanic right now. The Redskins are on the Titanic. I mean, they have 4-12, 5-11 written all over them. That's all there is to it. This team offensively is so bad that when they get, if they fall behind more than one touchdown, the game is basically, the game is over. They fall behind 9-0, 10-0, forget about it. They cannot be more than a score behind. And the defense, again, continues to struggle with stopping the run. Third straight game, they've given up at least 125 yards to the opposing team. And they have Frank Gore coming in this week. Good luck with that. Arizona, Washington falls to 3-4. Buffalo improves to 5-2 on the season. Baltimore survives Arizona 30-27. Arizona falls to 1-6. Baltimore improves to 5-2. A very unimpressive victory by the Ravens. Ravens were sleepwalking through this game, down 24-3 at one point before they finally realized that they were playing the Arizona Cardinals. And, before they, Joe Flacco started connecting with Anquan Boldin. Flacco throws the ball 51 times. He just, for 336, one interception. This is 20 passes for Joe Flacco. I mean, you have great advice. He only rushes 18 times for 63 yards, but he did have 3 touchdowns. And again, the problem you have with Baltimore is the quarterback. And what, you're giving him too much leeway. Flacco this year has really been bad this year. I mean, his completion percentage is 53%. He had veterans over the course of the week screaming to give Ray Rice the ball. Ray Rice had 8 carries against Jacksonville last week. You got Lee Suggs and these guys who have been defensive stalwarts for the Ravens for years, who are just, about to lose their minds because of what is transpiring on offense with Kim Cameron and the play calling. And if they don't get that right, then they're going to struggle down the stretch. Again, to play a first half like they played coming off the embarrassment of Monday night against Jacksonville doesn't speak well for the Baltimore Ravens. It really doesn't. I mean, I expected them to go in there and at home, especially at home, and just, run through Arizona. Arizona is an awful football team. They're traveling 3,000 miles cross country in the 1 o'clock time slot. That should be 35-10, 24-0, 27-3. That's how the game written all over it. Yet they struggled and had to sweat bullets to pull off that victory. Kevin Cobb, like you said, 10-21, a touchdown, one interception. How that worked out? How that trade worked out? If you're a Cardinal fan, I mean, what a disaster that has been so far this season. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL show, we will have the state of the AFC. Also, who's the best team? Who's the second best team in the AFC? In the AFC, and we'll look ahead towards next week. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. latest edition of the NFL show, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 8:30, 24 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. So look at the AFC, and, it's got to a point where I hope, in terms of what transpired with Pittsburgh and New England, that people stop trying to crown a team and call them a particular team the best team in the AFC. I've been saying this almost the entire season. There is no best team. There is no team that stands out in the AFC. There's no best team. Okay, I Pittsburgh, New England, San Diego, the Jets, Baltimore, they're all basically around on the same playing field. They're basically almost not the same team, but there's not much separation between those teams. Now, do I give certain, depending on the matchup, San Diego to a lesser extent, the Jets to a lesser extent, but there are certain matchups. Like, is it a game of matchups? Absolutely. But then, the AFC is wide open. And to be honest with you, I thought about this, in terms of the Texans. If the Texans were not so beat up defensively, I would give them a chance. With their running game and with the pass rush with Mario Williams, if he were healthy, I would say, hey, who knows? Shab is, Shab can make some plays. They get Andre Johnson back. But they have too many injuries on the defensive side of the ball. But there's nobody that stands out in the AFC. Is going to be, who knows? Don't try to give me the guess who's going to represent the AFC in February. As far as the second best team in the AFC, right now, on October 31st, 2011, I probably have to say this is a tough one because I watched this team lost to the Redskins. The Giants. The way Eli's playing, Bradshaw's been decent. That pass rush got Tuck, you got Menorah, and those guys are running. The Giants probably right now they're getting. That can change in a week right now. Probably the second best team in the AFC. Philly needs to get over 500. I can't say a 3-4 team is the second best. I think Philly has the most upside. And I think Philly potentially will be the biggest threat to Green Bay. But right now, the question was, who is the second best team in the AFC right now? October 31st. I probably would have to get, again, the G-Man. But again, we have a ton, 9 games left in the NFL season. So, stay tuned. As far as next week's schedule goes, you have a good slate of games after 2 weeks of suspect games. You got the Jets going to Buffalo, Tampa Bay at New Orleans, key divisional game. The Giants beginning their stretch of tough games, going to New England, of course, Green Bay at San Diego, interesting game. Chicago at Philadelphia, and of course the Sunday night battle, best rivalry in all football, the Ravens traveling to Heinz Field to take on the Steelers, who I'm sure cannot wait for Baltimore to get there, considering what transpired opening day week one down in Baltimore. So, good slate of games next week. These last couple of weeks have been kind of dicey. I did enjoy doing the game. But now I think next week you'll get back to some serious action as you will have majority of the heavyweights back in play coming up next week. Of course, other baseball news that I now only have about a minute to get to, but I'll get to Tony Russo retires as manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, 33 years as a manager, third all time in wins, 3 World Championships, the only one or two managers to ever win championships in both leagues. Bob Anderson did this for the Reds and of course the Detroit Tigers. All time greats, no question about it. Can he overbatch? Can he use pitchers at times? Yes. still one of the all-time greats. So certainly the Cardinals will miss him as he, you know, brought through championships. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the NFL Show. See you next week.